So with that, let's get into a bit of my bio. Here it is in a nutshell. The first one has a little bit to do with that Uganda thing, but that's something else. The second one, hacker by trade. That's what I do for a living. Used to have business cards. Johnny Long, penetration tester. Penetration specialist. Yeah. Kind of cool. Can't make that stuff up. It's just... All right. The pirate thing. Now, I'm sort of in a bit of a quandary over the pirate ninja issue. So let's just take a quick impromptu vote. How many people would vote pirate? Well, not too shabby. How many people, nice shirt, how many people would vote ninja? Good, that wasn't everybody. How many people would vote both? Excellent, there it is. So yeah, I'm stuck right in the middle there. I'm a pirate by blood. I don't look anything like Tim Mullen, who looks much more like a pirate than I do. But I'm a direct descendant of Sir Henry Morgan, who actually wasn't a pirate at all and didn't really do much with rum except, you know, sacking Jamaica, which was sort of after the war and was really an accident because, you know, the internet was lagging, so he didn't get the updates. But he was a privateer, not a pirate. So I'm descendant from him. And I'm working, as my bio said, on the third part of the hacker, pirate, ninja trifecta. Signed myself and my family up for ninjutsu. We black on April 2009. So once I get that, I'll actually have the business card that says Johnny Long, penetration specialist, hacker, pirate, and ninja. Which, I don't know, I think that sounds better than PhD. Dr. Johnny sounds a little strange anyway. And last but not least, I am an author by brute force. I just write so much stuff that I happen to be called an author because I have so many books out. And of the like hundreds of pages that I actually submit, like three or four get published, and I consider that a success. So we'll talk more about that. Speaking of books, that's what this talk is about. I was picked up to sort of write a chapter for this book called Stealing the Identity, or How to Own an Identity. And the problem with this series was that it was insanely popular, first of all. It had some really stellar authors that had written on it, people that I really respected. The stories, it was like fiction. For those of you that haven't read it, it was like fiction, you know, with all this technology in there. And I was like, man, this is like very readable. And I'm like learning stuff. And I was like, this is really cool. And then I was contacted to sort of write a chapter. And I was like, oh, how can I like... you know, how can I turn that down? I like jumped at the chance. And then they like sprang it on me that I was supposed to write a chapter about the guy who caught all these elite hackers and brought them down, which sort of sucked for me. So, you know, it's like, okay, you know, somebody like Ryan Russell or FX or somebody's writing this chapter about this elite hack that has absolutely no trail, and you know, it's just like this vapor that goes through the network and then disappears in a puff of smoke. And I'm like, wow, that was hot. Well, now I got to be the cop that catches this person, right? Or even worse, thank you, Ryan, for the character of Newth, who was so incredibly paranoid that he sanded down all of his CD-ROMs with a belt sander, right? So he's got this pile of, like, clear discs and this big bucket of, like, really shiny toxic stuff that you wouldn't want to inhale. So he did that to his CD-ROMs, and he had this like furnace thing in the garage that he took all his stuff, like his USB drives and his hard drives, and he like threw them into the furnace and melted them down into this slag heap. So it was nothing but a big ball of metal. I was like, wow, that rocks. And then they said, oh, and by the way, you got to try to catch Newth as well, because you know you're the cop in this book. I was like, great, thanks a lot. So basically what I had to do is I had to sit down and think about, okay, we got this established storyline with these people that did these incredible things. How do we write a storyline that's somewhat believable where the guy actually gets caught and there's no like Hollywood film magic involved? Speaking of Hollywood film magic, you might want to check the talk tomorrow because it's filled with Hollywood film magic. Not that that was a plug. So anyway, I learned an awful lot about forensics. And I also learned an awful lot about what people who do forensics for a living sort of take for granted. The forensics industry, as I know it today, is a factory. People that are using, you know, that have forensics shops basically get hundreds of cases, and they churn through them, and they have a small amount of time before they have to return the equipment and end this thing, and they basically get the low-hanging fruit, and they go, this is it, we're going to court, bada-bing. And one of the things that I noticed is that forensics people have a tendency to overlook the obvious. This talk is about finding evidence in some interesting places and sort of opening your eyes to the fact that evidence can lurk just about anywhere. The part that's hard about this is actually figuring out where it is, what to do with it. So try to have a little bit of fun with it. Now, we'll start easy. This is a test just to see if you're awake. Can anybody find the evidence in this picture? Very good. Very good. I tried this at DEF CON, and I just had to get everybody to look lower. It was, they're like, I don't see anything. I don't get, you got to look, it's the iPod. All right. One thing that's sort of interesting about iPods is, first of all, they're incredibly popular, but they're incredibly versatile as well. So the first thing I want to start talking about is iPods and how they can be used and the sort of evidence that might sort of hang out on these things. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to look at iPods as forensic evidence. Okay, now, put yourself in the shoes of a forensic examiner that comes upon an iPod. What's the first thing that you want to do with this thing? Like, what's your gut tell you to do? Image it. I heard image it. Pick it up would be, you know, an obvious one, right? Lift it off the table. That's a good start. Okay, well, right there, like, somebody like Newth would have had, like, C4 under it, and it would have blown my face off, but, you know, so. Okay, the first thing is you never, ever lift anything off the table. All right, that's the first rule. You got to leave it on the table. Yeah, imaging it isn't a bad idea. Some of the things that are a bad idea, besides picking it up off the table and getting your face blown off, is, like, turning it on and flipping through the menus. Does anybody know why? Right. You change the state of the device, you're altering evidence. Okay, so even the simple act of picking this thing up, flipping through the menus, going to the About screen to figure out information about firmware level and all that stuff is a bad idea. All right, so first thing an Uber agent is not going to do is jump right in and start using this thing. Now, one of the things that we have to consider as an agent is how are we going to process this? We need a platform to process this thing. If the iPod is an HFS, formatted iPod, you don't have a whole lot of choice in the matter. You've got to use a Mac. The Linux zealots out there will probably argue with this one and say, yeah, well, kernel revision, blah, 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 has read-write support for HFS+. And I'd be like, holy crap, I'm wrong. And that would be the end of it, but you know, the bottom line is if you've got HFS+, you've got to use a Mac, whether you like it or not. So that's the first thing. Figure out what sort of platform you need to use. There you go. Got our platform ready to go, so we can plug it in, start imaging it. What do you think, yes or no? No, absolutely not. The iPod itself, while it is a hard drive, is sort of an intelligent hard drive with all sorts of firmware, and the first thing that happens when you plug it into a Mac is it launches something, right? Usually iTunes, all right? So launching iTunes to access the iPod is about the same thing as picking it up, flipping through the menus, going to the About screen, mucking with things. All right. So the first thing you have to do is go through and figure out how can I keep this thing from doing that, because we don't want to corrupt data. That's the first thing we want to avoid. And the way that this works, and I wouldn't have known any of this stuff if it wasn't for this guy, Anthony Kokosinski, who does forensic stuff for a living and happens to be a Mac zealot, and happened to spend hours sitting down and figuring this out. Now, in the Stealing Identity book, we had, you know, this agent who was figuring it out, and it took like, I don't know, five pages, well, if I wrote it, like 50 pages, but it's supposed to take like five pages to go, ooh, look, I figured this trick out right here, which is that this demon, disk arbitration D, fires off and reaches out and grabs the iPod. That's the thing that reaches out and grabs the iPod. Now, disk arbitration D is running by default on the Mac, all right? So it would seem logical, you know, it's a Unix-based system, right? Kill the demon. plug that puppy back in. Take one guess what happens. The iPod restarts it because it's being helpful. You know. Now, I'm a big Mac fan and all that, but there are times when I just don't want any help. You know, I just sort of want to figure it out on my own, like a little kid that way, right? So, believe it or not, one of the things that you have to do is you actually have to go in and chmod disk arbitration D to 000. Kill it, chmod it to 000 so that freaking thing won't launch again, and then plug in your iPod. Good to go, right? Sound good? It's really a very simple thing. Okay, there's only one problem here. With a normal hard drive, when you hook it up to a device, what do you need to do to the hard drive? What's the first thing you need to do? Yeah, but before you do that, to guarantee you don't corrupt any evidence, write block it, right? How do you write block a USB device? Sure, that's a very good answer. They make hardware write blocks for various types of devices. It's a very good answer. But is there another way with an iPod? Sure, it's the diagnostic mode. Now this is a third generation iPod because this sounds a lot better for our book, and I'll explain that in a minute. All right, but inside the diagnostic mode, okay, basically what you do to get into this diagnostic mode is you power it off, hold down forward, backward, center, select, then release. Got it? It's like eight fingers. It does. It gives you 30 plus ones. Yep. All right. And then you select USB disk mode, you reboot the thing comes back up and it says, welcome to disk mode. Now this is essentially write blocked. This treats the iPod as nothing more than a USB disk. Okay? Essentially at this point it's write blocked. Alright, so now you can go in and do all sorts of stuff to the iPod. Now, from a simple discussion of, I got an iPod on the scene and I have to image it, am I the only one that's surprised at how much freaking work that is? I mean, that just seems nuts to me to have to go through all this stuff as a good guy. You know, when the bad guy can just do whatever he wants to the iPod. You know, whatever, doesn't matter. It's a lot harder for the good guys, and that's one of the points. And that's, I'm not going to make excuses for why a lot of the forensic communities are sort of this way, but this is one reason. It's a lot of freaking work to do all this stuff. All right. Now, yes, you can boot from an iPod. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's talk about some of the things that might be found on an iPod. All right, several things. First of all, porn. And music. Videos. Then there's porn. Calendars. Notes. And probably more porn. All right. So, skipping the porn, sorry. There's normal stuff that sort of hides out with some of these file types. For example, music, metadata. Metadata is old as the hills, right? Stuff that hides within documents that's part of what makes the document what it is, informational stuff, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so here's metadata. You notice anything odd about the metadata for this audio file? Yeah. What is that? What is that crap in the comments field? No idea. Could be anything. Could be a covert channel. See how easy that was for a bad guy? You type something into the comment field. Now, you have no idea what this will do for a forensics investigation, right? As soon as you throw one little smoke bomb out there in the form of this, if it's caught, it's probably going to cost somebody a lot of cycles to run down, if they're smart. They're going to look at this and they're going to go, holy crap, I found it. Look at that. Smoking gun. It's right there. It's a covert channel. All I got to do is figure it out. And then like 3 years later, they're like, oh, guess it was nothing. All right. So what can a bad guy do with music? All right. Say we have something like this. I don't know if you guys can read that. It's just like an iTunes listing. It's just generic. I don't know whose that is. Uh, Debbie Gibson. Wait, my name's on there. Oh. All right, so I'm going to play this for you. Never heard that song before in my life. What'd you think? I mean, not the quality of the music, but as a forensics investigator. Could be anything, right? Could be nothing. Could be everything. All right, well, let's look at it. A hex editor. What do we see? Anybody read that? This is a secret message. Ooh. Now, I'm not going to, you know, there's this whole Stego thing, right? And there's been lots of talks. I've attended lots of them, and I thought, you know, Stego is just incredibly sexy. And I'm told that it's actually being used. I'm told that, like, really bad people are doing really unbelievable things with steganography, hiding stuff within stuff so that you don't even notice, right? And there's lots of techniques for doing it. Here's one of them, okay? I took the Debbie Gibson song, opened it in the hex editor, and typed a secret message. Could you hear it? You could. Whoever said that listens to way too much Debbie Gibson. And that thing you heard wasn't the message, it was just Debbie Gibson being Debbie Gibson. But yeah, I mean, if you go into a hex editor, for the most part, if you type a message or, you know, every other character is part of your message, odds are if somebody plays it, they're not even going to hear it. So forget steganography. We're just typing into a file. This is seriously low-tech stego. Now, the question is, what's it going to do to an investigation if it's found? Again, it's going to throw it into an incredible spiral if it's ever located. All right, so this is just one of the challenges. All right, let's look at something else here. Okay. Now, as an investigator, take a look at this and tell me what's wrong. Besides the fact that it's Britney Spears. And this is just random data. I just pulled this off the internet somewhere. Wait, that's my iTunes again. Crap. Anything wrong? It's big. It is big. Well, Britney's big now, too. What else? Come on, you guys are thinking like geeks. All right? So is an investigator. What else? Anything? Huh? Nope. Thank you. Who said that? Britney Spears fan. It's spelled wrong. Britney is spelled wrong. So what does that mean? I'm hearing a lot of things. That's because it could mean a lot of things, right? The first thing it means is that there was no CDB lookup, you know, or CDDB lookup, right? If somebody popped the CD into their drive and let it do a lookup, the spelling would have been right, but they didn't. What did they do? Well, they either typed it in manually or what? Where might the file have come from? Could have come from a file sharing service, all right? So the reason I'm talking about this is it's little innocuous things like this that an investigator can use to sort of get through some of these files where you have a bunch of MP3s on a disk and you go, what the heck am I going to do with all these things? Well, sure, you can listen to them. Sure, you can look at the metadata and look at things like file size and dates and all this crap that like investigators get bogged down with. Or you can do simple things like the name of the artist on this particular song is spelled wrong, but every single other file on their machine is spelled correctly. What does that mean? Helps you narrow it down. All right, let's take a look at another one. What's wrong with this? Besides the fact that it's Britney Spears. Who said that? See, he knows he's right. That's why the hand came up like this. This isn't one of those where you like jump up and get the right answer and everybody thinks you're cool. This is one of those where you want to be very quiet. Yes, the title is truncated. And specifically the title is supposed to be I'm a Slave for You. And the song was actually on the album Britney from 2001, which was later released on the Greatest Hits My Prerogative album as a bonus track, which came out in 2004. What are you laughing at? It's just a fact. And besides that, there was no Me Against the Music album. That was actually just a song. And none of this stuff came out in 2002. Not that I'm a Britney Spears fan. Okay, let's move along to the next one. What about this one? Very good. It's lowercase. Okay? Why is it lowercase? Again, same thing. You can take one look at the metadata in this file and go, something's different about it. Okay? Now, let's move along. Lowercase. Also, you've got other stuff. You know, with AAC files, you've got registration data. The AAC file actually played a role in the book, where an iPod that we picked up for a case actually had some stuff in it, AAC files that were registered to an email address. The email address was the first lead for an identity that we were following down, blah, blah, blah. All right. Now, let's move on to some images. Anybody see anything wrong? True. Bruce might be here, so let's be nice. Well, do you see anything different between the two images? Anything? I'll put you out of your misery. Let's look at it this way. See anything different here? Too small? Hard to see? All right, let's go at it this way. Now, obviously, they're different. Can anybody tell me what the message is? Yep. What's the message? What was that? Windows suck. All right. Well, how about this? Shmoo rocks the house. Now, again, this is just to make a point. Now, I don't know whether or not Stego is being used, okay, but Stego, if you use it to hide stuff, you're going to have the tools on your machine, probably. You're going to have the tools that created that on your machine. Now, if the tools aren't on the machine, a lot of people make a dangerous assumption that there's no Stego, but I have a hex editor on my machine, and again, I just type the information into a JPEG, just like this, skipping every other character. And the images were identical. You can't even tell the difference. And, you know, forget all this, you know, least significant bit crap and, you know, all this technical discussion about Stego. It's just typing, right? So looking for the tools that create Stego just isn't enough. All right, now, how about some, let's do the same thing with video. Little video clip here for you.
Hot. Ban! Ban! There's all these vulnerabilities. Ban! Ban! Wee! Wee! Oh, curveball! Wee! Hot! Wee! Hot! Oh my god, you can't do that anymore!
Pretty hot. I'd give like anything for like half that energy. I just get like tired watching that. I'm like, dude, that was like a workout, just like right there. All right, but let's watch it again. Look for any differences.
Hot. Bad, bad. There's all these vulnerabilities. Bad, bad. Wee, wee. Oh, Colonel. Wee, hot. Wee, hot. Oh, my God, you can't do that anymore.
Thank you, Bruce. Can't do that without just the raw material to make it happen. Awesome. All right, so let's cut to the chase. Here's the differing sector. Can you see the message? That's the first part. That's the second part. Ooh, I hear it. It's like a chorus of Bruce's. Bam, bam, hot, bam, bam. That's the message. So again, video, same deal. Forget Stego, forget the tools to create complicated hiding devices inside the video. Take a hex editor, dump it in. You can't see the difference. You can't see the difference because it's not even there. All right? So, again. All right. Now, we're still talking about iPods and the things that they can hold, videos, all that sort of stuff. Here's a listing from an iPod. Anything out of the ordinary? Nopix.img. What is that? Close. It is an OS. That's right. Nopix is an OS. What specifically is the image file? Excellent. Persistent home directory. Now, as far as I know, I might be wrong on this, but I don't think you can create a persistent directory without encryption on the latest version of Nopix. I think you have to encrypt it. Can you? Okay. All right. So either way, it's a persistent home directory for Nopix. So what that means is that somebody used this iPod as a home directory for a Nopix boot, right? Now, if they're going out of their way to do this, they've probably encrypted it. In this case, it's AES 128-bit encrypted, and you're hosed if you try to break it, unless you find the key phrase. All right, other stuff. You've got calendar information on iPods, all that sort of stuff. Other MP3 players are the same way. What else? Oh, one more thing I want to mention here. With all this like mess that I've been talking about with these files and how they, you know, the uppercase isn't right and the name spelled wrong and all that crap, it's entirely plausible to go out on like file sharing networks and search for the misspelled title or the misspelled, you know, songwriter or whatever, you know, and pull the file down, grab a hash off of it, and compare it to the hash of what you have in front of you. Quick and dirty, right? Odds are this person downloaded a misspelled version, especially if you find something on their machine like Kazaa or Acquisition or, you know, BitTorrent or whatever. You go, this person's using file sharing. We can look at the records, see if they downloaded them. If we can't find that, go online, pull down what looks to be the same file, grab hashes, compare them. If they compare, you're probably off the hook. No evidence there. Now, how many people that do forensics investigations, show of hands, can actually go out on the file sharing networks and download whatever they want? Show of hands. One. All right. So call that guy if you need to do that. It's a lot harder being a good guy. All right. Let's play some games. Now, let me set the stage for you. You're a forensics investigator. You've come into the home of a bunch of 19-year-old guys. Roommates. And this is their kitchen counter. Now, what's wrong? Yeah. This is good. This is good. You guys have potential. This is good. All right. First of all, Fiber One. I haven't met a 19-year-old that's sort of irregular, so that's good. Somebody mentioned the crackers. What about the crackers? What kind of Wheat Thins? Those are the low-fat, low-sodium ones. Now, okay, to a 19-year-old, what is the point of Wheat Thins if they're not crusted in, like, sea salt, right? Because you've got the two food groups when you're 19. You got the salties and you got the sweets, right? There's nothing in the middle. All right, so, yes, absolutely, that's a problem. So what is it about these Wheat Thins and Fiber One cereal that's so suspicious? Anything? All right, well, let's move one. Boink. See how this game works, right? Now, the point of the exercise is looking at something and going, what's not right about this? It's very simple stuff, okay? But the problem is the geek, the forensic investigator, sorry, that has all your gear is not the person who was on the scene most of the time, right? So the geek that's forensic investigator that's doing all this stuff has no clue that what any of this stuff looked like. That's a problem. Okay, that's a problem that could hurt the investigation. So looking at a scene and going, what's different about this is a normal forensic practice, period. I saw it on CSI. I know it to be true. Right? You go in and you're like, holy crap, there's blood splattered everywhere. That's out of the ordinary. Right? Well, in digital forensics, you don't even have the benefit of that. You don't have the benefit of traditional forensics stuff, usually. But there's no reason why you shouldn't. Forensics is supposed to be a science, right? It's supposed to be a science. It's not supposed to be an art. It's not supposed to be a TV show. Well, digital forensics, although it's getting closer, isn't quite a science yet. But there's no reason it shouldn't be, right? There's no reason procedure like this should get in the way of getting the bad guy caught. All right, but a lot of times it does. All right, let's look at... We're talking about digital cameras right now, in case you didn't guess from the SD card. Here's an EXIF thumb. Looks at the metadata with a thumbnail shot of the actual photo. Your crime scene is one digital camera with one SD card with one image. That's it. Solve the case. Or, at the very least, figure out where this happened. Go. Letterhead, excellent, very good. But what's wrong with this picture? You've got it. Front row's got it. What would you say in the back? That sounded good. Yes. Somebody said the laptop's missing. That's good too. No, seriously, I mean, that's... Why does this guy have a picture of a desk with a laptop missing? Question number one. What's on that letterhead? Question number two, right? Why is this the only picture that's on his camera? Question one again, right? What is this about? And let me add to this little thing that's going on here. The guy that owned this camera is dead. Oh. Well, wait, I'm sorry. I'm the owner. In the story, that came out wrong. In the story, this came out of a homicide investigation. One camera on, he's got a camera on him with one picture. Now somebody up here said it. Look at the date and time. What about that date and time? What time is it? 4 a.m. That's a great question. It could be wrong, but I think you guys are getting to it. The sun's out at 4 a.m. Poking. Perfect. The camera could have the time and date set wrong. Now, let me ask this question. How many people in here process, and you can do the mini wave if you're embarrassed, process like digital cameras and stuff? Okay, we need some people to fake it. So, right. Now, how many of you actually get the camera versus how many of you actually get the card? Or worse yet, how many of you just get an image of the card, right? The forensic shops that I know about, they don't go, oh, look at me, I'm the geek from CSI, and here's a camera, and I go, whoop, pick it up. C4 blows my face off, but after that I walk over here, and I drop it on my laptop, and I boop, 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 and stuff scrolls, and it looks like The Matrix, and everything goes slow motion, oh, bullet time. And then, ha-ha, the evidence. Doesn't work like that. Big shops, somebody grabs the camera, hands it off to an imaging shop, the imaging shop images it, the image goes to the investigator gets the image of the card. Will the investigator know the daytime stamp on the camera? No. What's wrong with that? Everything. And that's sort of the point. Now, I'm saying all this from the other side of the fence, because you guys know me, those of you that know me know that I'm on that opposite side of the fence. You know, I play bad guy, and, you know, so you know, spitting over the fence at the good guys that are doing forensics is real easy from over here, you know, because I don't have all these procedures to deal with. But man, that seems dumb. Doesn't need to be that way. So in this particular case, we're lucky to know that the timestamp is correct on the camera. Standing here, Eastern time zone, hit the magic button, check the time on the camera, and it's right. So what does this mean? Exactly. It's this picture was taken somewhere that at 4 in the morning Eastern Standard Time there's daylight. Alaska. It's not bad. Hope I did my math right, because it's supposed to be like South Africa. But anyway. So somebody mentioned the letterhead. Again, zooming in on the letterhead, you get a logo. Just give you an idea. I sort of pixelated it and did some color stuff so it looked like I did that super image zoom off the reflection in the mirror. Of, yeah. It's a neat trick, but in reality it's easier just to read the letterhead right off the picture. But anyway, NOC. What do you do with a logo that says NOC? Google search. Anybody know anything about Google? NOC, the Nigerian Oil Company. In this place called Nigeria. It's in Africa. Right, timestamps match up. All right, what about these two? Two pictures side by side. What's different? Photoshop. I heard it right off the top. Very good. Photoshop. The create time and date don't match. The camera software doesn't match. The left one talks about a Nikon. The right one talks about Adobe Photoshop. The right-hand image was processed in Photoshop. All right. Little things like that. You don't need to have the original to actually look at this thing and go, somebody mucked with this in Photoshop. Why was that? Could be for any number of reasons. All right. Blah, blah, blah. So the point of that is actually looking at the pictures is a pretty good idea. Not getting rid of the camera that the card came out of is also a pretty good idea. All right, simple things. All right, more EXIF stuff. EXIF data mining. If you go in and actually do some trending off the EXIF data of your images to figure out if they're all consistent, you can narrow down quickly to inconsistencies. Stuff like that's pretty straightforward. If you have a library or you know of a library that actually has the stamps from certain cameras, well, the stamp from the camera should match all the images that came off of it, right? Should. Does anybody check for that? Don't know. All right, let's get to the fun stuff. Some more games. Where's the evidence in this picture? It's not the laptop. It's not the thumb drive. It's not the mouse. I heard it. Voila, the phone. Absolutely. So if that's our crime scene, and we grab the laptop and we grab the USB, and we leave the phone behind, is that a problem? Probably not, right? So we're gonna check phone records back at a switch somewhere. Great, all right? But if we take the phone with us, what are we gonna miss? We're gonna miss last number dialed, we're gonna miss park settings, we're gonna miss, you know, all sorts of forwarding stuff. There's all sorts of stuff that you lose if you don't have the phone that aren't actually in the phone records. All right? Anybody recognize this thing? What is this? Mm-hmm. It's the phone in the suites upstairs. It's an IP phone. Which, while I'm on the subject of IP phones, generally speaking, if you have a network in a secured environment that's handling things like, I don't know, IP phones, is it a good idea or a bad idea to join that network with networks that actually house sensitive customer data? Bad idea, which is why no one would ever do that. Mm-hmm. All right, cell phones. I'm not going to talk about cell phones. Printers. All right, printers have all sorts of stuff hidden in them. All right, you've got all sorts of this information menu. You can go in here and print out an event log. How was that for a forensics investigation? I just printed an event log. What did I do? Modified data. I changed something. I also erase the like print head residue so that like the boys in the basement at NSA can't like suck data off of it. Which is a bad thing. All right? But a decent investigator knows you can do the same exact thing through the LCD panel without printing a single page, or go through the printer web interface. Printer web interface is like this. If you can't find the printer web interface when you're actually on site, you could probably just do a Google search for it and then find the printer and get in that way. Fax machines, same deal. Fax headers. All right. Out of all this information, what's relevant? The phone number can be anything you type in, right? Company name. Maybe the company name's significant. Who knows? All right. Blah, blah, blah. Never print without swapping out any devices that may contain physical evidence. All right. Let's have another game. Where's the evidence? Now you're sort of getting the hang of this, right? Like in the laptop picture with the USB drive, guess what it wasn't? Ooh, guys are good. All right, let me narrow it down. Here's all this. Now where's the evidence? Those are breath strips. There's your USB watch. Evidence hiding in plain sight. USB storage, all right? Now where's the evidence? It's not the breath strips. Not using breath strips can leave some sort of evidence on those you talk to and spittle upon. Nope, not the ring. Let me help you narrow it down. Now where's the evidence? The hand in the hand. No, nothing up my sleeve. Still the watch. No. All right. I'll let you guys out of your misery. Getting warmer. Oh, come on. You guys would make terrible investigators. You'd be like, yeah, I'm on this like episode of CSI as like a forensic consultant, and I got all the stuff and threw away the breast strips and I got the watch. The bad guy's like, all right, let's try another one. Where's the evidence? Now, this is just a junk drawer, right? How many forensics guys are actually going to go in the junk drawer? I mean, if you're going to get your face blown off by taking the iPod off the desk, God forbid you open something which could naturally explode without any explosive. Where's the evidence? Nope, not the wallet. Holy crap, not the Blockbuster card. Not the receipts, although that's not a bad idea. That's a good idea, no? Yo. Yo. What's up? No, it's not the yo-yo. I do got yo-yo skills, though. Yo. Nope, not the fingernail polish. All right, ready for it? Sorry if somebody said it. It's really hard to hear. Mm-hmm. USB pen. Did you leave it in the drawer? Did the investigator on the scene actually leave a USB pen sitting in a junk drawer? Maybe. Where's the evidence now? Somebody up here said it. Not evidence, but what is a pointer to other evidence which should be on the scene as a result of looking at this drawer? What other evidence should be in the house? An iPod. Right? So somebody goes in the junk drawer, they see an iPod charger, right? Some, you know, flak jacketed tactical gear ninja military guy, right, with the headlight thing and the laser pointer goes in the door. Whoa! He grabs everything in the house and like gets out. Super secret. Right? But he didn't get an iPod. He gives it all to the geek and the geek goes, hey, yeah, we got him. And he doesn't get him. He's screwed. That means the iPod's probably on the guy. Well, if the geek and the like Darth Vader helmet guy with the tactical gear don't like actually communicate or share a brain, you're hosed. All right. Where's the evidence? The what? Dog? Nope. Nope. That was good, though. I put that in there just to distract you. Oh, wait, that is not a kid's toy game with a keyboard on it. It's a computer for little people. Good grief. Tell who has kids. Anybody? Not the bus. All right, let's zoom in. Oh, there it is. Thank you very much. See him? See him? That's his butt. That's his butt. See him? Mm-hmm. You a thinker, you so smarty. USB power saw. No. First person to say USB toilet paper just has to go. Fake spray can. That's not a bad idea, but nope. The toilet paper is punch tape. That rocks. That's so retro. The problem is feeding it into that reader. You got to be all gentle. It's not a saw blade. It's a cut up CD. Not a bad idea. All right, you ready for it? Mm-hmm. Flashlight has an embedded video camera. Believe it if you want, but there it is. Where's the evidence? Bing. He got it right away. Think geek. Now, normally I would put an advertisement right here that said, go to thinkgeek.com for all of your geek purchases, but like I called them and I was like, I'm doing this really cool talk about like hidden stuff, and I'm like, my name is Johnny Long. Thought that would work. Can you like send me some stuff so I can take some pictures, and I'll give you like banner space and blah blah blah, and click. So if you buy it somewhere, don't go to ThinkGeek. Now where's the evidence? It's not the big ball torture device. Hmm? Not the gargoyle. Digital picture frame. Where's the evidence? Nope, not the stapler. It would only be a USB stapler if it was red. I guarantee you. You got it. There it is. Yep. Now, the Darth Vader guy in the tactical gear would take one look at that. He'd be like, that's not a knife. Leave it behind. All right, here you go. About the next one. USB banana. No. Guys are slacking. It's almost time to drink, I know, but there's no evidence there. It's just a bowl of fruit. Made you look. How about now? Oop. Very nice. How about now? Now, the muscle-bound freakazoid in the black tack would probably have eaten all of these. Not even noticed. Till they passed through. Some bad sushi. USB Pokemon. Thank you for pronouncing it properly. That's awesome. No. Did somebody say Bulbasaur? That's awesome. I really can't make this stuff up. Let's try it again. Not the USB Pokemon. That's true, it is not the USB Pokemon. You win. Anybody know what that thing is? Close. How about an e-reader card for a Game Boy e-reader? Each one of these cards holds 2.6K. Seriously. And you can rewrite them. All right, so that one was stretching. Let's go back to the 19-year-olds. Coke Zero, absolutely. What is up with that? It's like low caffeine, like no calories. I mean, God forbid. Who would drink diet soda? It's like you got to be like a huge geek. It's really rum in there. I'm a pirate. Arr. Right. Well, we sort of already talked about this, right? We did this one where we did the magic trick. Boink. All right. But let's do it again. Where's the evidence? Now, again, the big muscle-bound freak in the black pack is probably going to eat everything on the counter, including the evidence. All right? Ready for it? Boink. Now, that is as big as two flakes of cereal. How much storage? Yeah, well, that one's a gig, but they go up to 2 gig. Mini SD card. Let's hide it. Ready for it? Here you go. 1 gig micro SD card. That's a gig of data, folks. A gig of data hiding behind a flake of cereal. Right? You could throw this in the cereal box, like probably eat it, not even know that there's like a freaking gig stuck in your teeth. Right? Now, I don't need to beat a dead horse about this one, but I mean, come on, there's a million places you could hide something like this. Do the people that are breaking down the door know to look for this stuff? Probably not. All right, what else is wrong with the picture? Pick out something else that just doesn't belong. That's not a bad idea. I heard gum, but no. I heard it over here. It's a zone perfect bar, low fat, high protein. Doesn't belong anywhere near a 19-year-old unless they're like on roids and trying to bulk up. Here's the bar. Boink! You could just stick it in the bar. How about now? We talked about the gum, right? What about the gum? Now, we're not talking SD here. This is a USB 2.0 1 gig memory stick right near USB slot. That's how big it is. That's all there is to it. Let me show it to you in scale. Okay. The Sony's actually go up to 2 gigs, so you get the idea. All right. This is the Johnny Long Memorial Bookshelf. What doesn't belong? The what? Google hacking? No, it's actually right side up. It's just, I forget which translation that is. The third Google hacking. Close. All right. Well, one of these quite obviously contains evidence. Let's start with that one. Which one quite obviously contains evidence? How about the big one? That comes with a CD. Book that comes with a CD that happens to not be an original CD. Are the books staying on the shelves? If he's a geek and he's got books on the shelves, there you go. How about the other book that was on the shelf called Johnny Longlegs, which Johnny Long would not put on his bookshelf. Come on. That's that search that screws me up in Amazon every time. All right? What about this one? Where's the evidence in this picture? Nope. It's not in the box either. The evidence is in plain sight. They look like videotapes. It's a bad picture, so I'll give you that. There's audiobooks there. What's wrong with these audiobooks? Exactly. See the Memorex logo? It's not an original disc. Looks like an original disc, but it's not. CDR. All right? Here's some more books. We'll zoom in a little closer. Which of these does not belong? Now, arguably, Journey to the Center of the Internet doesn't belong, but if you haven't read it, really, you must. Just funny. All these high-tech books, how about that one that looks like this? Circa 1984, where, lo and behold, hiding in the schematics, bada-bing. All right? The whole point of this is looking for things that are out of place, and I think it's just, it's not done a whole lot. Video collection of me personally. This is part of my DVD collection. Exactly, right? Okay, you've got Hackers, you've got The Matrix, you've got Sneakers, you've got Walk the Line, which is Johnny Cash. Then you've got, like, hey, Finding Nemo, go easy on Nemo. Yeah, but Pride and Prejudice, right? You know, if you're in a house with, like, 3 19-year-olds and you find Pride and Prejudice on the shelf, either one of them is, well. It's a good movie. All right, what's wrong with this picture? Besides the karaoke. There's nothing wrong with karaoke. All right. Forget the Xbox. That's awesome. We'll get back to that. No. Where's the evidence in the picture? Uh-huh. All right. Right? Discs? What's wrong with this disc? It's not original. How many people have a mod chip for their GameCube? Oops. Did I say that out loud? Where's the evidence in this picture? This is like a combo. Where's the evidence and what's out of place? Ooh, there it is. We have a gamer geek in the house. Rock on. Xbox 360 memory stick and a lack of an Xbox 360. Very nice. All right? You guys got this one. Now, let me just ask a quick question. Somebody already answered this one. Where's the Xbox, right? Well, there's the Xbox. Where's the evidence? Now, they're going to grab the big envelope, right? They're going to obviously grab the big envelope filled with... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what's wrong with this picture, though? It's Burnout 3. Great game. Not as good as Burnout 4. Still a great game. Lots of crashing mayhem. What's wrong with it? The printing's off-centered. What's that mean? Boop! That's what that means. It's not an original game. If it's not an original game, what is it? You turn on the Xbox, you see something that looks like this. All right? You go farther into the Xbox, you see this. It's got IP settings. It's got an FTP server. It's got IRC settings connecting to an IRC server out in the Netherlands. This, ladies and gentlemen, is an IRC client machine. It's a modded Xbox. It's got full IP capabilities, an FTP server, full-on storage, whole nine yards, doesn't have a stock hard drive. It's 200 gig hard drive. Okay? Your evidence is everywhere. Screenshots. Log into it. Default password. There's your drives. What's interesting about this listing? Nopix. It's got Nopix loaded on it. What else? Actually, what else is scary? Yeah, exactly. Tor. What else is really scary? Anybody know what Tor Park is? It's the browser bundled with Tor so that you just launch it and it erases all your history, gives you access to the Tor network, the whole nine yards. Runs on Windows. What's different about this one? What's the file extension? Xbox executable. A version of Tor Park ported to the Xbox. Scary stuff. Okay. Other stuff? Lots of places for data to hide. All right, so wrapping up. Basically what I wanted to do with this talk is just sort of lightly touch on forensics. Didn't want to get too deep technically, just wanted to provide some alternatives, ways to think about evidence and sort of the problems that we have with the forensic scene, maybe have a little bit of fun. Remember, I'm doing this this campaign right now. If you're buying Amazon stuff and you're not using somebody's click-through associates account, you want to give money to charity, get the Amazon price, help out folks in Uganda, and check out Stealing the Identity, Stealing Network, How to Own an Identity, and all that. So thank you.